coming at you live from the headquarters of the Mossy Oak Militia. Them good old boys who are always DTB, that's down to booge. Gather the goons, it's Radio Contra. I'm NC Scout coming to you live from North Carolina, deep in the hills, but just over the border from Virginia. Had a long hiatus between episodes, had a class over the weekend, got to work with a lot of really good patriots, had an incredibly good time, a lot of good discussion, some of the things that we're going to talk about in this podcast. But first, we've got some current events to talk about. Welcome to episode 5. This section's brought to you by ammo.com. You don't have enough ammo for what's coming next. Ammo.com got some of the best deals on the net. Excellent company to do business with. I've been working with them for quite a while now. If you click on the link in the sidebar, you'll get $15 off your first order of $200 or more. That's ammo.com. So first up, watched part of the debate on the Lynchburg City Council, which ended up turning down a resolution to make this city a sanctuary city for the Second Amendment. Yeah, you know, and this shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone. City councils are overwhelmingly dominated by leftists and normally those that are connected to the universities that are in the cities. Lynchburg is obviously no different, but there was a lot of good points that were made by the different people that showed up and said their piece, and that's something to be respected. However, the thing to understand is that these are people who are giving their very last appeal to the democratic process, to their last little bit of credibility. And, you know, as any first-year poli-sci undergrad knows, that when the ballot box fails, that's when the bullet box starts. Our nation was founded on the very fact that you have an inherent right to be armed. You know, it's a bit of American history. It was the British that were trying to disarm the patriots that kicked the whole revolution off to begin with. And we can point to that as being the flashpoint. I'd like to remind everybody that Virginia is a deep red state with just a handful of deep blue cities. So read into that what you will, but there's a lot of folks in Virginia that aren't going to take it laying down, and they have a lot of friends. There's also been a bill that was introduced just over the border in West Virginia, inviting any county that wanted to join West Virginia based on, in their language, intolerable laws, to join West Virginia. And while I was discussing this with some of the other staff members of American Partisan last night, I don't see that going anywhere. It's just like a few years back, there was the move to make a North Colorado and a South Colorado. You know, the state of Jefferson is another one. There's a lot of rumbling out there on that. You know, North California splitting away from California proper. But while all these gestures are to be commended, I see them as a signal of a greater problem, kind of a greater mood. But I don't think that they're going to lead to an actual schism. And that's just my opinion. I could be wrong about that, but generally splits between states are not an easy thing to obtain. And when you have leftists that control the reins of power, there's a lot of elements. It's not just a simple, you know, let's go our separate ways kind of deal. But I do have an update from the VCDL, Virginia Citizens Defense League, regarding the January 20th protest that is upon us. It's regarding lobby day logistics as well as other important information. And I quote, "Here are several things you need to know if coming to the VCDL lobby day on January 20th. Parking. If you're coming by car, there will be a satellite parking area at the Diamond located in 3001 North Arthur Ashe Avenue, Richmond, Virginia. The entrance to the parking lot is around the corner, Robin Hood Road. VCDL will be running shuttle services from Diamond to 9th and Broad Streets from 7 to 3. Shuttle bus and parking are free, but if you want to make a donation to help cover the costs, you can donate online. Street parking and local private garages will fill up quickly, and we're trying to keep the traffic congestion around the area as low as possible. Handicap drop-off. There'll be an area on East Marshall Street between 8th and 9th for a handicap drop-off and pickup. This is also the location where shuttle buses from Diamond Parking Lot will load and unload. It's a 5-block walk to the point where the lines will form and enter the building around 3 to 4 blocks, the entrance of the Capitol Square. This is the closest that the Richmond Police Department can get us. Also, please be advised there will be no special entry line into the building for disabled people. The Capitol Police and the Department of General Services have indicated that one line at one entrance will be used for everyone. As far as street closings, working our way down, Broad Street will be restricted to one lane in each direction from 14th Street to 7th Street. 9th Street will be closed to vehicle traffic from Carey Street to Broad Street. Main Street will be closed from 14th to 9th. Franklin Gray Streets will be 8th and 9th. And Bank Street will be closed as well. The street closures will be in effect from 0700, that's 7 a.m., until approximately 1600 or 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And there's some other notes under there, dress for the weather, as far as food truck vendors and whatnot. And then some important things. As of this moment, weapons carry is prohibited inside the General Assembly building and the Capitol for this reason. We suggest that if you intend to go inside to lobby, you should leave your firearm at home in your hotel room. I don't suggest doing that, me personally, or out of sight in your locked vehicle. Don't do that either. Just don't do that. That's just not a good idea. Do not leave an unsecured gun in an unlocked car. Well, thanks for that. It should be common sense. There have been multiple firearms stolen out of vehicles lately. Again, this is, again, do not take a firearm out of its holster down at the bottom. Folding knives with metal blades less than 3 inches are allowed. However, some of the Capitol Police officers not aware of such knives being permitted. Well, of course they're not. Officer discretion is a very interesting thing. Request, or if Capitol Police won't let you bring such a knife, request a sergeant or lieutenant be summoned. Yeah, right. Okay, good luck with that one. Twice I carried a 2.9-inch knife because we all know exactly what a tenth of an inch looks like, right? And placed it in the provided screening basket as I went through security on January 19th. And no problem. Okay, let's just stop. If you're going there, you need to expect some conflict. You need to go there with the mentality that you're going to be confronted. You're going to have some issues. All right. I've talked about this in person, kind of alluded to it on other outlets. My friend and fellow AP staff member, Matt Bracken, has written about it, which has generated some interesting comments here and there. And, we're not saying don't go and not demonstrate for your rights. That's not what's being said at all. And I don't mean to denigrate anyone that's involved in the VCDL. Nobody wants you to succeed in your mission more than me. Okay. But what I am saying is that common sense applies, number one, to this. You are going to run into some issues. You need to go there expecting a fight. Yeah, I know that this has been an annual event for every year and yada yada and whatever. And you know what? Great. I'm very thankful for those people that showed up. But you need to be realistic in understanding the fact that this year is quite a bit different than other years in the past. And on top of that, that your democratic system has failed. I mean, we seem to be stuck in this notion that, you know, if we just lobby harder, if we just make our voices heard, well, you know, if we just vote harder, that they'll stop trying to take our rights. And of course, we all know, anybody that's been observing this stuff for quite some time knows that this is wrong. They're not going to stop, folks. The left is not going to stop. When you have a staffer from Bernie Sanders's campaign, all right, and I'm not even talking about, you know, like some run-of-the-mill guy. This is one of their elite staffers. When you have people like this that are out there caught on tape, undercover recordings done by Project Veritas, saying that anybody that has an opinion contrary to theirs needs to be put in a gulag camp, and then goes on to defend gulags as, you know, well, it's not that bad. They weren't nearly as bad as what the CIA made them out to be. They even had conjugal visits, right? I'm sure because the women that they placed in the gulag camps being forcibly raped by the commissars, I'm sure that was purely consensual. But when we have people who are openly saying this, and make no mistake, folks, I've been upfront and personal with the left in other contexts outside of what I do professionally, and I've seen what they think behind closed doors. I've been privy to some of those conversations. And you need to understand that this is how all of these people think. They've attained the reins of power through manipulating holes in the government system. All right? You need to understand this. They have absolutely no regard for your rights. Your rights are defined by whatever constraints they place upon their power. And when you live in a society like that, you really need to stop and think, why is it that you continue granting them power? I grant them no power. And circling back to my point about Lobby Day, they're also looking for a great situation to use you to manipulate public opinion via the controlled media. Think about that. Absolutely not saying don't go. You definitely should. You definitely should. You know, Vox Populi has a power all its own, but just be advised that there's a lot of controlled opposition out there. There's a lot of controlled media that's going to be looking at this. It's going to be looking for a reason. And you have a lot of people among you that you don't control, that you don't know, who are going to walk in. And I'm not saying that there's going to be agent provocateurs there, but I definitely think like the other side. And if I was looking to undermine such an event, or I was looking to capitalize on chaos, I'd pull something like that. And, you know, if you're not thinking like your adversary, and at least looking at it as what's the most likely course of action and what's the most dangerous course of action, then you're going to walk right into an ambush. So think about it. I know what I'm going to be doing on the 20th. I'm going to be out training. Our time for debate, our time for making our voices heard, our time for simply voting harder, unfortunately, sadly, I think is past. And at this point, we really need to start considering that the fact that it's not time to LARP any longer. It's time to stand up and say, we need to get serious. We need to start seriously preparing. We need to cut the frivolous stuff out. We need to cut the fat. We need to start working harder. And that begins with training. I've got a lot of training events on the calendar. Brushbeater.wordpress.com/training calendar. Got many events that will be held in different corners of the nation. I think I've got dates going up all the way through September. So if there's something on the calendar that looks like a hole in your training program, check it out. Hit me up. Send me an email. If you've got any questions or concerns, send me an email. And I'll be happy to get back in touch with you. And I'll be very glad to train with you. All right, our next section is brought to you by Palmetto State Armory. Palmetto State Armory, really, really cool manufacturer of AR-15s and the best domestic manufacturer of AK type rifles in the United States. I just ordered an AK from them this past week. Picked up a metal triangle side folder with a wood handguard. Really good looking rifle. Talked to their director of marketing, and I'm excited to get this thing in my hands. I know AK Operators Union, give a shout out to you guys out there. Robski puts on an excellent YouTube channel out there where he tests different AKs. Did a 5,000 round torture test on this thing. Just looking at it, being a lifelong AK shooter myself, I got my very first AK when I was a 18-year-old guy coming, coming right out of high school, saw one of those AKs, said, man, I want to play Red Dawn. I want that thing. And it was a Romanian SAR 1. And this thing, I think that it was so crooked that it actually did accidentally shoot straight. But despite how mangled up that thing was, I was impressed with it. And it unfortunately ended up selling it when, I fell on a little bit hard times financially, like a lot of us do. But since then, I've owned a lot of different variants of AKs. And I'm excited to get my hands on this one. I've had a couple of American-made AKs from manufacturers who will remain unnamed. And we'll just say that I was less than impressed. But Palmetto State Armory, I've been impressed with the quality of everything they have. Right over here on my wall, I've got two rifles from them. A 14.5-inch pinned and welded AR, as well as a 10.5-inch AR pistol that I've run several classes with. And so far, the quality for the money has just been out of the park. So Palmetto State Armory, click the link in the sidebar. They're an affiliate sponsor of the site. We've got a really good working relationship with them. And as I was told in the company email that was sent out to all of the affiliates for PSA, their goal for 2020 is to put so many guns and ammo in the hands of American citizens that no gun buyback is literally feasible nor possible. So go and check them out. They're a good company down in Columbia, South Carolina, and they absolutely support you. And I'd like to give a shout out to Primary Arms as well. Primary Arms, maker of quality optics, really good stuff for the money, and I've been using their products for some time now as well. They're 1-8x24 with the advanced combat sighting system reticle has been superb. I've had guys that have been in the scout course as well as the squad designated marksman workshops I've put on. I had one guy come out, needed to borrow a rifle. He used my special purpose rifle. I've got a 16-inch BCM with a SOCOM SOPMOD barrel on it from BCM, the SOPMOD profiled barrel. And it's topped with the 1-8x24 with the ACSS. After doing a quick zero, the guy was dinging steel all day out to 500, literally effortless on his part, using 77 grain Sierra Match King ammo. So check them out. Really good company, and I think they offer some of the best bang for the buck in optics value out there. And hey, if what Primary Arms is making isn't their in-house brand, isn't necessarily your flavor, they got a lot of other really good optics as well, including Trigicon, Leupold, Burris, anything you need, you name it, they've got it. So check them out. Click on the link in our sidebar and hit them up. Show them some love and tell them that American Partisan sent you over there. All right, segment two, preparedness group issues. So, being a tactical trainer of sorts, and, you know, I've been doing this for almost 4 years now, since I taught my very first civilian side class. And before I was doing it publicly, before I was doing open enrollment classes, I was only teaching private groups. And it was, you know, it wasn't really a formal thing. It was just people were contacting me that read my original blog, brushbeater.wordpress.com, and needed training in some of the other areas that folks don't typically get. You know, whether it was doing the snooping and pooping stuff in the woods, you know, the sneaky Pete stuff, or communications training, or some of the TC3 or tactical combat casualty care class that I offer and I've run in the past. I've worked with a lot of preparedness groups. Overall, the experience for me has been a major blessing because I've seen the full spectrum of groups from really, really good to some guys that definitely needed some work. And I would say the big difference between those two different groups in that dichotomy comes down to the leadership techniques of the person that's in charge, as well as the group dynamic between the members. And on that note, I'll say that the more successful groups I've seen, while every group I've trained with has had military vets in there, the ones that I've seen that have done really well have all had one thing in common. Everybody checked their ego at the door. And what that means is that, you know, they all recognize that everybody has specialized skills and everybody brings something to the table, and that, you know, you don't have to be super formal. You know, everybody will absolutely do this and we'll all wear the same camo and whatever. You know, the groups that were a little too rigid in those things and in those aspects were the ones that ended up losing members over time, had people that kind of lost interest, or at worst, they had conflict within their group. You know, the ones that were better, they, like I said, they checked their ego at the door. You know, a good leader that's in charge of a group doesn't have to constantly remind everybody that he's in charge. Everybody knows it. And it's with that self-confidence that it breeds success. Something that I tell folks quite often and was told to me is that success breeds success. Absolutely. But also, that having good leaders when I was a junior soldier in the Army is really, really important. But also, simultaneously, having bad leaders is just as important. And what I mean by that is the fact that you have to learn what a bad leader is, and you have to work under one. That guy that's just a super asshole, man. And everything he does, he's a micromanager. And, you know, nitpicks every little thing you do, and he's constantly down your back on, you know, on every single decision, second guessing you nonstop. You don't want to be that person. You know, you have to work under somebody that's really bad like that to really appreciate a good leader. And, you know, in the Army, as probably any of my military vet or current serving military guys that are listening will be laughing right now, but you know that it's true. And once you do work for a good leader who's laid back, leaves people to their own devices within reason, there's some times that you need to have that autonomy, and there's some times that you need to have that more direct approach. But once you've worked under a good leader, you get those qualities ingrained in you, and you want to emulate those a lot more than you do avoiding those bad qualities of that bad leader that you worked under. And we all remember those people. And it's not strictly military either. I mean, folks that are working in a working world, you know, guys have been on construction crews, guys that are on landscaping crews, whatever else, working in an office, we've all had that foreman, or you've had that manager that you're just like, man, I hate that guy, and I curse the ground that person walks on. But then again, we've worked under good people too. And so when you're thinking about your preparedness group and building your preparedness group, as a leader, you need to be thinking about that. You need to be thinking about what ways can I maintain group cohesion, and in what ways can I keep my people motivated and interested in what we're doing to meet that common goal. I mean, one of the groups that I had the pleasure of training with was so good and so squared away, and everybody, they were blessed because everybody on their team was a self-starter, was there ready to train, constantly motivated, and everybody got along. Now, not every group has that, and they weren't all former military people. They don't have to be former military people. But they do have to have mutual respect for one another. And they absolutely had that. So having respect is a big part of it. Respecting your people. And if you respect them, they're going to respect you. And getting back to the military example, it's important to know and recognize where authority comes from. The authority to make decisions and the authority to tell another, to direct another in a task. And in the military, it comes from specific qualifications. I mean, if you get a group of privates in the Army together and you put a specialist in charge of them or a corporal in charge of them, he has some sort of qualification to be a corporal. I mean, you know, whether he's a dirtbag or not is a whole different story. But he has some sort of qualification to be there. Either he was just the best among the group, he went to one of the leadership schools, went to WLC early, his warrior leader course in the Army. Used to be PLDC way back in the day, primary leader development course. They don't call it that anymore, but, he's got some sort of qualification to be there. And the same can be said for a platoon leader or a company commander or platoon sergeant, you know, or first sergeant. They've got qualifications to be there. And in civilian groups, when you're talking about most things that are voluntary, man, it's a little different. It's a little different. It's a little more delicate. Are there specific qualifiers for somebody to be in charge? And I would say, really, it's a voluntary thing. It's up to the group. I mean, if they say, you know, hey, this guy's the smartest among us and we recognize it, all right, he's in charge. All right. But simultaneously, you can't just appoint yourself in charge of something and say, you know, well, I'm in charge. Okay, because you're going to have somebody come up underneath you that's going to challenge your leadership. They're going to try and buck you. They're going to try and buck the system and say, you know what? I think I should be in charge. Tell me why you should be in charge. When you have that happen, and you will have that happen, especially if you get young folks in your groups, and you need young folks in your groups, I'm going to question your right to be in charge. And you got to have a competent answer for them. One good way to do that is to have team building activities. And there's a lot of ways to approach that. Team building activities at your group get-togethers, at your group training events. Do something that's hard. I had an old first sergeant who, when the unit started doing stuff to get themselves in trouble, would have too many people getting in trouble for small stuff or in some cases big stuff. And what we would end up doing is going to the field. And he told us, you can't get in trouble when you're in the field. All right. And he would pull all us junior leaders in. Every Friday morning, he would pull all of us in to give us a real short non-commissioned officer professional development, or NCOPD. And what he would tell us is, he would say, if it was a day that we weren't doing a company formation run or something, he would say, you're going to take your men on a 5-mile run as fast as you can. And, you know, for some of us, all right, Roger that. Others of us, when, you know, you're running that much every day already, thinking, man, you know, it's Friday, rather be doing something else. And he would tell us, you need to break your man off every day at PT, because that is the time that you prove yourself as a leader, because your young soldier is going to look at you and say, you know, this guy's out of shape. Why should he be in charge of me? I'm more fit than he is. Why should he be in charge of me? I can do more pull-ups than he can. I can push more weight than he can. I can ruck harder than he can. And you need to take every opportunity with your people to prove why you need to be a leader. You owe it to them just as much as they owe it to you. And in preparedness groups, you know, there's not a direct correlation to that, but you should definitely be doing something to prove why you should be the leader, why you should be in charge. And that's the first biggest thing about group cohesion. If you're the one that's running around telling everybody, well, I'm in charge just because, and there's literally no qualifier for you to be in charge, and you've never even looked the part of being in charge of anything, then you're going to end up having people walk away from your group. Meanwhile, a more charismatic leader, that person that you want to work for, it's going to be a little bit better. You're going to have a little bit better results. Next, I'll say that you can't focus solely on guns and ammo. When you're building your group, whether you want to call it a preparedness group or a mutual assistance group or a militia or whatever you want to call it, the tendency is to focus on guns and ammo. And everybody likes guns and ammo. I mean, that's the cool guy thing to have. But you got to realize that not everybody's a trigger puller, and not everybody is cut out to carry a weapon in combat, per se. You know, we're not all designed the same. Not everybody is built the same. And on top of that, that kind of thing can get boring after a while as well. Especially if you're running through the same couple of training scenarios every time that you get together and train. You're going to end up having people say, well, you know, I've got something else going on, or, you know, I don't really have time to run that same sticks lane again. Sticks is a situational tactics lane, or squad tactics lane. I don't really have time to do that same one every time. And, you know, you need to realize that maybe you ought to break it up, vary it up, have different training goals. And have a set training goal when people get together. So, you know, this weekend we're going to be working on medical skills, or this weekend we're going to be working on combo skills. You know, you got to realize that there's a lot more dimensions to preparedness and to training and to those skill sets than simply doing a movement to contact all the time, doing the cool infantry stuff. And on that, I like to say that everybody brings skills to the table. Everybody brings something unique to the table. And if you're the guy that's putting things together, you're the guy that's organizing stuff, you have to recognize what that is, what those things are. I mean, you know, not everybody can go out there and carry a ruck for, you know, 6, 8, 10 miles. And of course, then you're going to have some studs that can. But, you know, maybe that guy that or girl that can't necessarily carry a ruck for a long distance, maybe they're really, really good and understand the logistics required for cooking for the entire group. Or maybe they are absolutely gangbusters on medical skills. Maybe that person is an RN, or, you know, maybe even a doctor. You know, in that case, when you recognize that person's specialty skills, do you even want them in the field anyway? I wouldn't. Personally, as a leader, if I was in that leadership role, I wouldn't want those people in the field. They're too valuable with their other skills. The challenge also becomes, when you're doing that, to have them recognize that, hey, you are just amazing at this one thing that you do. Take a weekend, and this is a little bit of a leadership development thing too. Take a weekend and teach the rest of the group some things about what it is that you do. And, you know, you're going to build that person's self-confidence up really well. as well as also building them up to teach others. Because one other thing that I like to tell folks is that whatever the size of your group might be right now, it might be much larger in the future. Maybe smaller, but I'm thinking it's going to be much larger. You're going to have people who are volunteering their skills that are going to come out of the woodwork, especially when we have things that are not going well, you know, and all signs are pointing to the fact that we're going to have some sort of conflict between people. You know, we can't have political activists and political organizers saying that they're going to put people in gulags for simply not agreeing with them and for saying that, you know, there's consequences for free speech, because that is what these people believe. That's what the left believes, you know, and as more and more folks come to recognize this and come to realize this, you're going to have more people that are on the side of good that are going to come to your aid. So it's just a few leadership lessons, you know, and take it for what it's worth. Like I said, I've trained a lot of really good groups out there. I've had some that needed a little more help than others. But anything that you are doing right now, getting out, using your equipment, taking that time to spend it with other folks in your group, anything that you are doing right now is going to make a difference in the long run. It's a heck of a lot better than sitting on the couch and doing nothing. So folks, the last thing that I'll tell you is get out there and do it. So how's your food storage looking? Have you got enough? Have you got a year's worth? How about 2 years worth? Augustin Farms. Augustin Farms is a company that I've been buying from for a few years now. Really good products, good taste in food. They have a 30-day bucket that is under $100. Feeds a whole lot of people out of one bucket. Freeze-dried food, got a 30-year shelf life. It's good stuff. That's Augustin Farms. How about beef? American West Beef, another site affiliate. Good folks. I ate a steak from there last night. Bought some steaks for the family and had them shipped out. Their shipping was really quick, and the prices on their beef were pretty good. And, you know, I wasn't expecting the best steak in the world. I was blown away for what I got. I'm personally a New York strip man, and, you know, I've had some really good ones. I've had some that were kind of so-so, and one of the best ones that I ever had was out at Cattleman's in El Paso, Texas. This one was close. I kid you not, this one was close. American West Beef, check them out. Up to 60% off the sticker price in the grocery store. Got really quick shipping. They are down there in the sidebar. I've got it broken down by category: food supplies, cutlery, as well as arms, ammo. And hey, folks, one last shout out to Bob Griswold over at Ready Made Resources, one of the best sites on the net for getting night vision. You need a set of PVS 14s. I mean, there's less expensive sets out there, but what Bob has in stock right now, what he is able to get, is mil-spec aviation grade, meaning pilots can use these PVS 14s. The white phosphor set, he brought some out to class. Some of the folks were able to use them after dark. And man, I was blown away by the quality. I really was. And I'm used to using PVS 14s all the way from back in the mid-2000s when I was in the Army up until the present. I've got a very old set that's about a decade old. And let me tell you, the stuff that's out there now, the intensifier tube that's out there now, blows the old stuff away. Ready-made resources. Go check them out. Tell them that NC Scout and American Partisan sent you over there. Ready-made resources. And folks, I'd like to give you a heads up on some of the classes that we have coming up on the schedule. I've got a class in New Jersey, the Ground Intelligence Collectors course, a 3-day course coming up at the end of January, that first weekend in February. Those that last day of the month, and then the first days into February. We're going to have a heck of a good time. There's a Mount Village that we're going to be working on. It's a very hands-on course, and I think that everybody there is really going to enjoy it. I know that I have a blast every time that I hit the Northeast. A couple more classes that I have on the schedule here in the spring. The RTO course, we had it last weekend. We've got another one coming up in April here in North Carolina. If you're interested, this is the communications course for preppers, anybody that's concerned with underground and off-grid communications. This is the class for you, the RTO course coming up in April. And originally in May, I had a RTO course scheduled in Tennessee, but at the request of the host for the class, we have changed it to the signals intelligence course. And a few words on the signals intelligence course. This is kind of the opposite of the RTO course. This class covers the other side of the coin. It's recognizing the electronic warfare threats out there. We go way, way beyond simply using a police scanner. We cover that stuff just within the first few minutes of class, and then we move on to very hands-on, practical end intelligence collection. But again, all that's on the calendar, brushbeater.wordpress.com/training calendar. Go check it out. And as always, folks, I've had a heck of a lot of fun doing this podcast. I know that there was a little bit of a break between the last episode and this one, and it's because I've got a lot going on. But hey, I do this podcast because of all of you, the listeners. I run the classes that I run because of all of the awesome people that have come out to class. Every opportunity that I get to train with folks is just an absolute blessing. And for me personally, I am always impressed by the people that come out, and I don't fear for the future of this nation. We've got some hard times and some serious challenges ahead of us, but from the people that I've got the chance to work with, the truly good people, good-hearted people, honest people, and hardworking people, our best days are still yet to come. God bless you, and until next time, this is NC Scout out.